The gospel reading today, John 2, 1 through 11. Please stand or take whatever posture works best for you for the hearing and reading of the gospel today. On the third day, there was a wedding in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine gave out, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." And Jesus said to her, "Woman, what concern is that to you and to me? My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servants, do whatever he tells you. Now standing, there were six stone water jars for the Jewish rites of purification, each holding 20 or 30 gallons. Jesus said to them, "Fill the jars with water." And they filled them up to the brim. He said to them, "Now draw some out and take it to the chief steward." So they took it. When the steward tasted the water that had become wine and did not know where it came from, though the servants who had drawn the water, of course, knew, the steward called the bridegroom and said to him, "Everyone serves the good wine first and then the inferior wine after the guests have become drunk, but you've kept the good wine until now." Jesus did this, the first of his signs, in Cana of Galilee and revealed his glory, and his disciples believed in him. The word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Thanks, worship team. Oh, ever since I woke up this morning, I have been so excited to share with you what I dreamt about last night. Do you ever have those moments where you're sort of awake, and so maybe you're controlling your dream just a little bit, but you're mainly asleep, and so it still feels like a dream, and when you come out of it, you don't have any control over it at all? I had one of those moments, and I don't know if it was right when I was falling asleep or right when I woke up. But it was on my mind today, and like I said, I couldn't wait to share it with you. I think because I looked at the journey that Carolyn sent out last night, and I looked over the birthdays, I noticed it's Lori Bird's birthday today. And so that made its way into my dream. And so did Eris and Christy Vartanian. And I don't know the connection with them. That part, I think, is just random. But no doubt this scripture was in my head as well. And in my dream, I'm watching Eris and no doubt like Aaron Metcalf and Boone. They're over there and they're chatting. And Christy comes over. And by the way, we're at a birthday party for Lori Bird that day. And Christy comes over and she says to Eris in my dream, she says, "Eris, half the people have gone through the line already and the cake has already run out." And Eris says to her, wonderfully, only because I love to imagine what Christy would have done in this moment, Eris says to her, "Woman, what is this concern of yours to me?" And then I woke up and I was so delighted and so disappointed because I really wanted to know how Christy would respond. I'm imagining a verbal and perhaps even physical reply to Eris in that moment. But what I love about that dream is that it displays the oddity of what we receive in John chapter 2 today. I mean, what a wonderful and at the same time peculiar passage that we receive today. The wedding feast at Cana, the miracle of water to wine that Nolan just read for us. The story, of course, is very familiar to all of us. It's deep within us. Whether we have a Christian background or not, we know the story of the water turned into wine. And yet, even so, many of the details of this story are just plain odd, which I think is part of my dream last night. These details are almost head-scratching in their strangeness. And I wonder, as no one read that, did you pick up on some of those rather strange details? The way John never actually uses the name Mary, but calls her the mother of Jesus over and over again, multiple times in the first few verses alone. The way Jesus never uses, as we just noticed, the word mother, but calls his mom woman instead. I confess, I can't imagine a scenario that would ever bring me to call my mother woman in her presence. She was all of 5'2", and that would have never happened nonetheless. And Jesus does it here. And the way Jesus responds to his mother's observation about the wine, as if he's chuffed she's even mentioned it in the first place. Why should I care, woman? It's almost as if he doesn't. And yet, despite his response to her, again, another oddity, despite his initial reluctance, he then turns around and miraculously produces not simply what was needed in that moment, but an exceeding abundance of it. At a small wedding like that, to sort of put it in perspective, he produced something akin to 10 bottles of wine per person that day. I mean, this wedding just got a whole lot more interesting when Jesus produced all that wine, right? Lori's birthday party is a bash at this point. And even the way he goes about producing the miracle itself is intriguing. Have you ever considered this? He asks those servants to do what? To go fill 6 25-gallon stone jars with water. Where in the world would they have gotten so much water? How far did they have to travel to carry all of that water? I mean, it's not like they had faucets in the house. How long must that have taken to fill up 150 gallons worth of water? And then at the end, just the strange sort of juxtaposition of secrecy and revelation, which is common in the Gospel of John in this one passage. Nobody knew what Jesus did, save for a few servants and his disciples, and yet this was the first moment revealing his glory. The whole thing is curious to me. And yet perhaps because of all of that, the story is also rich in subtlety and depth. It has, in fact, been an unending source of theological reflection and inspiration and production for millennia. It's not any surprise that the largest picture in the Louvre is this picture from this scene on this day. It sinks within our imaginations and produces fruit. But of all the strange lines that stand out to me in these 11 verses from John chapter 2, I confess, I found myself fixated this week on one verse in particular, a striking line, and I couldn't get it out of my head. It's one of Mary's two lines in this story, but it's not the one that most commentaries focus upon. Usually, when reflecting on this passage, commentators praise Mary for what she says to the servants, and I love the way Nolan read it. Jesus responds to her. She turns to the servants, almost disregarding what he's just said, and tells them, do whatever he tells you. As if she knows already what's going to happen. And that, of course, is a wonderful line. Jesus has just, of course, shrugged his shoulders at her, and yet she seems unperturbed and simply turns to the servants and says, he's going to do it. Just listen to whatever he says. Again, it's a wonderful line and strange. And yet, it's not the one that stood out to me this week. Rather, I was struck most powerfully by what she said initially. The only other sentence she speaks in these entire 11 verses. A simple line of 4 words, just 3 in the Greek. And I wonder if you remember what she said first. In the Greek, it's oinon, ouk, ekousin. In the English, it's simply this: they have no wine. And for whatever reason, that line sunk deep within me, held on to me this week. In many ways, it's sort of an unremarkable line: they have no wine. In some ways, it's just a simple detail, merely meant to move the story along, to help us get to the good stuff, the miracles, and the glory that this passage reveals. And admittedly, those words have never stood out to me before when I read this passage over the years. They've never really spoken to me at all. However, this week, knowing that John was not one to use words lightly, that in a gospel where it's just as common for John to leave out half the story, it always feels like he's left out two-thirds of every conversation. Someone asks Jesus a question, he responds as if he's in another conversation. John does that over and over. So the words he does include must, in fact, be important. When he's stingy to the point of obscurity with his details at times, I began to wonder if there just might be more to Mary's words than just narrative filler. They have no wine. And if those words, in fact, might be a calling for us. Even if it wasn't immediately obvious to me what those words meant, it did seem to me there's something important there. And it was curious to me that John, in a weird way, almost seems to be calling attention to Mary in this passage. Again, I've sort of highlighted it already, but I wonder if you noticed that, the way he draws attention, precisely by refraining to name her. I mean, she is the most important Christian woman on the planet at the time. And John can't be bothered to name her. And I began to wonder, did he do that on purpose? I wonder, is he up to something here? Almost like some sort of reverse psychology. Anyone ever try that on you? Parents, right? Or masters, kids, I guess I should say, or masters at trying to do that? It's as if John says, I'm not going to name her so that you will notice that I haven't named her, and therefore she'll stand out to you all the more. If so, if that was his strategy, it certainly worked on me this week. I couldn't help but think about Mary and her single line, they have no wine. So all week long, that word, it sort of trailed me around like a ghost almost, haunting me, even as I slept. They have no wine. And I couldn't quite figure out why, until I came across another very odd story in the news this week. A strange and wonderful sort of story. And in the midst of it, all of a sudden, it struck me what Mary was up to. These stories aren't connected in any way whatsoever, and had I seen this story any other week, it wouldn't have mattered to me. But this week, it struck me. And so I'd like to share that story with you and see if perhaps it makes the connection for you as well. Perhaps revealing to us what Mary meant when she said those words that day at Cana of Galilee. So, the story goes like this. In the early March 2021, I wonder, a remarkable scene. I actually saw this on a Twitter feed. I don't even have a Twitter account, but you know, you can click on the news and it takes you to a Twitter account. I saw this on a Twitter feed, actually. A man was driving a white luxury sedan, and he collided with, on the street there, one of those mobile apple carts, if you can picture that in your head, powered by this oversized tricycle, right? Can you picture that in your head? A large bicycle with a single wheel in front, two wheels in back, and this platform on the back stretched out across the wheels with baskets and baskets of apples stacked up like 10 feet high and 10 feet wide, precariously held together by just a couple strategically placed ropes. And as that tricycle and that bicyclist are making their way down the road, a white sedan smashes into them. I wonder if you can imagine the scene as I'm describing it here. The whole thing was stunning and remarkable, especially what comes next. In this video, from this busy intersection, and note, there's only one video on this, there's one traffic cam that sort of captured all of this. The white sedan and this oversized apple cart on wheels collide into one another, and the resulting scene is almost surreal. The cyclist, of course, was tossed from his ride, bouncing twice on his backside in the street before coming to a stop on the pavement. The tricycle itself, its momentum just sort of carried it entirely off the screen. Who knows what even became of this thing? But the most remarkable part of the whole scene were the hundreds, the thousands of apples on this cart. When those two vehicles collided, it was like confetti was shot out of a cannon on that street that morning. Basketful after basketful after basketful of fresh, bright apples shot into the air in a blizzard of fresh fruit. And for a moment, that was all you could see on the screen, just these white apples, these oversized raindrops falling everywhere. And when they finally landed on the street, it looked like they were covering the pavement almost like giant snowballs on the road. It was all in black and white, almost like giant snowballs all over the road. And if you hadn't seen the accident, you might be tempted to imagine the scene was some sort of apple-y abstract art project spread out all over the road. It was mesmerizing almost. Which I suppose partly explains why no one moved, which was the oddest thing about the whole scenario. The whole scene was stunning and strange. But what really stood out to me in that moment were two things. One, the cyclist. As if in slow motion, he's just been thrown from his cart. He's laying on the road. And as if in slow motion, you can see him on the video. He closes his eyes and he lets his body fall back onto the ground in dismay. Not because he was wounded physically, not really, as the video later shows. He was okay, amazingly. But because this was no doubt that man's entire source of income, sprawled out across a busy intersection in Baozhou, China. And the second thing that stood out to me was this. In that video, for a full 60 seconds, which isn't that long in general, but in this moment, it was an eternity. For a full 60 seconds, the most bizarrely silent 60 seconds imaginable, not one person in that entire crowded intersection did a thing to help. This man's life was spread out on the road in front of them, and nobody twitched a muscle. Everyone just stayed in their cars, motionless. This poor man sat there surrounded by his apples, and no one did a thing, as if they couldn't or wouldn't see the devastation and loss that was right there in front of them, and then do something about it. The whole scene was disturbingly quiet, eerily still for 60 seconds. Nothing. Honestly, I'd never quite seen anything like it. And then, after all that time, from the bottom right-hand corner of the screen, a single man made his way out into the intersection. The traffic cameras that captured that moment made it difficult to determine where this man had even come from. Maybe from a nearby sidewalk. It didn't look like he was coming from a car, but who knows? All we know is this. This tall, black man with a round cap, hands in his pockets, walks slowly out into the middle of the intersection. And then, my favorite part, this man paused. Everyone in the intersection is staring at this one man. And for just one brief moment, almost so brief you couldn't notice, for one brief moment, this man paused and turned his head. I imagine he even raised his eyebrows and just stared at everyone around him. And in that moment, I swear I could almost hear him say, "They have no wine." Of course, the street cameras that captured the scene had no audio, so we can't be sure if the man quoted Mary in that moment or not. In fact, I'm sure he didn't. But that is what I heard. They have no wine. And after that brief pause, that brief tilt of the head, that lift of the eyebrows, that tall man with the round cap bent at his waist and picked up an apple. And then another, and then another, and placed them in one of the thrown baskets. And he did so so slowly. Again, it was mesmerizing to watch this guy. And in some sense, almost comical, for he was moving at such a glacial pace that those apples were going to rot before he ever picked up 1,000 apples on his own. But he kept moving, and he kept bending, and he kept picking up apples. And at first I thought maybe he had some sort of ailment. Perhaps that was why he was moving so slowly. But then it occurred to me that wasn't it at all. Rather, he was moving as he did to give everyone on that road time to open their eyes so that they might see, really see, the situation before them. This man's livelihood was sprawled out in front of them. And maybe upon seeing, they just might act. And so for another 60 seconds or so, not a single person on that road moved until a young woman entered the intersection on foot and joined that tall man, picking up apples one at a time and putting them back in the basket. And then, one after another, all the car doors began to open. And the people began to get out. And the street was flooded with men and women and children putting back thousands of apples into those baskets. When asked later in interviews why no one had moved to help in the first place, the people in that intersection said it was because of COVID. Of all things, it was because of COVID. They were told not to interact with others close up, and they didn't know what to do. And so they stayed in their cars. Asked why they then eventually got out of their cars after doing nothing for almost 2 minutes, they said, "Well, it all started with this one man who helped them see the situation differently, who helped them see it for what it was. This was not a COVID moment. This was a human moment. And seeing it through his eyes, they couldn't help but act. Miraculously, they saved almost every one of that man's apples. You do see a scooter squash one of them at the beginning of the video because it couldn't get out of the way, but almost all the others were eventually saved for this man to make his living. And with that, seeing this story play out, it occurred to me. I suddenly realized what Mary had said in John chapter 2. For what is it that Mary noticed and named that day, if not this, when she says her line, "There is no wine"? What is she saying, if not, "There is need here"? Everything is not okay. And in speaking those words, she enabled the ones who could make a difference to act, like the man on that street in China. And hearing it in this way, I realized something about John's story from John chapter 2.
Admittedly, simply noticing and naming a problem, as this man did, as Mary did, doesn't really solve the problem, which is true enough. And yet, the fact is, until we notice and name the realities in front of us, absolutely nothing will be done. And that, it seems to me, was Mary's gift that day. In fact, that, I suggest, is what John wants us to see. Mary recognizes and registers a cause for concern. And here's the interesting thing. Even before Jesus does, we've talked before about weddings in the first century. They were seven-day affairs. And the one sacred duty of the parents of the bride and the groom was simply this: provide enough food and wine for everyone present for those 7 days. To not do so was not simply disgraceful, it was to shame the husband and wife before their life even began. What Mary saw that day is this husband and wife had their life sprawled out on the ground at an intersection before them, and it needed picking up, and no one else had noticed. Mary notices even before Jesus does. Just consider that for a moment. And his miracle, as grand as it is, never happens that day, if not for his mother's awareness. She saw what Jesus himself had not yet seen. And by noticing it and naming it, she moved him to action. Simply put, there is no miracle without Mary. Now, I have no idea personally how to turn gallons of water into gallons of wine. I've not been able to produce that miracle. I don't suspect I ever will. But what I can do is precisely what Mary does. I can pay attention. I can notice. I can name. They have no money. She has no cure. He has no friends. I have no strength. We have no answer. They have no justice. They have no wine. This is where action begins. Noticing and naming. This is where miracles occur. And that, I believe, is precisely John's point. In today's gospel passage, we most certainly catch a glimpse of Jesus' glory. And in Mary's attentiveness to others and willingness to speak, I suggest we catch a glimpse of her glory as well. And perhaps even a calling of our own. Look upon our world. Notice. Name. Speak. This is where miracle begins. Amen.